listening to Magic From Wherever I'm At with your host, the magician, time traveler, and charmer, D'Artagnan.
Welcome to another edition of the podcast. I'm D'Artagnan, and today I'm going to start the show with the opening stanza from one of the best magic books I think that exists. And the reason it's one of the best, I think, is it sort of tackles right away, right in the entrance to the book, right in the first chapters, it starts to tackle the sort of things we talk about on this podcast. And the book is Our Magic. If you're a magician and you haven't read this, then you better stop calling yourself a magician. But I'm going to start by quoting from this chapter on the real secrets of magic. Because people always ask me, in confidence usually, you take a hard line on things. You have very definite opinions about magic. You know, and they've perhaps never heard someone be so strong in those opinions, especially around other magicians. And they wonder, like, how did you arrive at this place, perhaps? And the number one answer is from actually reading the literature written about this very art. So the real secrets of magic, beyond doubt, the attractiveness of magic is largely due to its secrets. Not only to the general public, but also to the professional magician, the secrets of magic represent the most fascinating branch of the subject. They are, among all classes of society, a popular topic for conversation. They have given birth to whole libraries of literature and are responsible for a mass of chuckle-headed opinions, greater in number and variety, perhaps, than ever resulted from the discussion of any other subject under the sun. I really enjoyed the fact that you used the term chuckle-headed opinions there. Unfortunately, however, notwithstanding the constant attention devoted to this theme, the real secrets of the magic art have received but scant consideration. Their true nature, indeed, their very existence, may be said to have been almost entirely disregarded by the public and too frequently overlooked by professional magicians. The prevalent idea is that the secrets of magic consist in tricks and dodges connected with the manipulations and the apparatus employed in the art. To most people, the quote-unquote secret of any magical presentation means simply quote-unquote how it is done. It is assumed that when once these devices used in producing the magical effect have been discovered, the secret of the effect is revealed. The trick has been found out, and therefore nothing remains to be learned. A more erroneous view has never been conceived. Not only so, it is a view that cannot be justified on any rational ground, as we propose to show in the following pages. The real secrets of magic are not merely trade secrets. They are not workshop devices connected with manipulation and mechanism. They are not ingenious dodges which, when learned, enable their possessor to accomplish all that a skilled magician can do. They are not tricks and puzzles devised for the bewilderment of the public. Far from it. They are of an order far higher than elementary matters of that description, and far removed from the popular conception of their nature. Our present object is to disclose these secrets, to explain the real basis of the magic art, and the principles upon which magical effects actually depend. In short, we intend to show not only the tricks which magicians use, but the essential factors which underlie the whole art and practice of magic. It will be found that so far from being bound up in jugglery and paraphernalia, the true art in magic is purely intellectual in character and comprises an infinitely varied range of interest. So there you have it. Basically, Mr. Maskelyne here has boiled it down to what we say on this podcast on a virtual episode to episode, a clarion call, drum beating, whatever you want to say, which is, it isn't about the tricks, devices, methods, and all that, you know, which I do love, but which are mere tools in the production of what is really magic, which is the presentation of those effects. And I'm going to quote from a little bit in the presentation chapter too, especially the part that he starts off with. And he says, in relation to what may be termed the applied art, quote-unquote, side of magic, the subject of presentation has not only the widest scope, but also the most vital importance of all subdivisions of the art in magic. I think we need the God voice to go over that one more time.
But also the most vital importance of all subdivisions of the art in magic.
Just in case it wasn't clear. Indeed, since magic is one of the ephemeral arts, which can only attain fruition in actual performance, one might say that without adequate presentation, there can be no art in magic. And apart from mechanical and speculative matters, that statement would be entirely accurate. The final purpose of the art is the presentation of its effects. And until those effects are presented, the art itself cannot be perfected, but must remain a thing of little importance in the eyes of the world. Therefore, it is in this department of his art that the magician, as it were, puts the coping stone upon the edifice erected by his skill and labor. So you're seeing what Mr. Maskelyne is saying here, is this is the most important aspect. There can be no magic without performance. There can be no art without presentation. And that once you have grasped this, and put what I would term the real work into it, he calls this the coping stone, which is sort of the last stone you place on top of a structure to sort of finish it off, right? And so all your skill and labor has been put into this a thing, and the presentation is the coping stone, which makes this actually all work and become magic. Now, what's interesting is that a little further into the book, he has a very interesting way of characterizing a few things, which I found to be particularly interesting because it's just, it's sort of an interesting metaphor. And I would say that one of the things Maskelyne really gets right in this book is there's a section where he talks about the two things which a performance of quote-unquote magic requires, which is magic and entertainment. And he says, you know, for a magical entertainer, this is what the public expects. If they give plenty of magic, but it's served up in such a hasty way that they have no time to digest it. He's just blazing through the tricks or whatever. It doesn't really satisfy the other expectation, which is the entertainment. And vice versa, if there's no magic, and you are a magician, if there's no magic, and there's just a bunch of talking, it has real no basis or doesn't drive anything forward, right, or long delays. You sort of see this in bizarre magic, where if you've ever seen like a, you know, terrible sort of bizarre magic, it's like the epitome of what Masculine is talking about here. It's like this verbose, overinflated, weak, endless, bad storytelling. And then like the magical effect itself has no power. And it's usually like not even a good effect either that's chosen to be performed. So that's sort of the two ends of the scale. So you want to be somewhere in the middle here. But he suffers from one of the problems that most of the magic community suffers from, which is performing in front of people who come to see magic, only having magical audiences. So when you perform on the street, that isn't the case. You have people in your audience, the vast majority of which never came to see a magic show. They didn't leave their hotel or their doorstep thinking they were going to see a magic show. So they're a much different audience. And I think you get a much, well, I don't think, I know you get a much realer appreciation for what people think about magic and what people think about your magic. So to bring it back to Masculine, when you do have this nice harmony of magic and entertainment, and really, you're using the presentational aspects. This is a thing that people just never ceases to amaze me. That if you really want your magic to be strong and you don't craft any sort of good presentation for it, it's not going to be as strong. It can't be as strong. I digress. Going back to Mr. Masculine, he says, we don't have these balance of things. The magic they wish to enjoy, instead of being served up properly, is thrown at them, take it or leave it, just as the waitresses at cheap restaurants dump down the food before their customers. And this next line, I would say, is the sort of default status, I would say, in the world currently. And he uses a very interesting metaphor here. But I would say, because magicians in people's lives are so rare, and the performance of live magic, people rarely come in contact with the performance of live magic. They see, maybe see some on TV, and it's pretty prevalent on TV these days, I would say. But it's all of the same variety. The presentational aspects are deeply lacking. So he goes on to say here, some people, no doubt, can put up with such treatment. And this is the metaphor, I would say, explains how the world sort of sees magic and is sort of dulled to the current state of magic. He says, some people, no doubt, can put up with such treatment. They get used to it, as eels do to being skinned. And that is a beautiful metaphor. But also, that is my what I think, you know, because people encounter this so infrequently, basically anything you do, they'll label as good. Until they see actually something good. Right? And he goes on to say, but surely the person who cannot enjoy a meal better served must have an exceptional constitution. And I would, maybe at one point that would be true, but I don't think that's the case, generally speaking, because, like I said, people come in contact so infrequently and they're like, oh, I've actually met a magician or somebody calling himself a magician today. And he did a couple tricks for me and they were cool, man. I liked it. You know, but that's a far cry from it having a real powerful and entertaining effect on the person. And so we will conclude the last 5 minutes of this episode, episode number 40, with a little story I will tell from the Traverse City Cherry Festival I attended back last summer. I was performing along one of the main streets, which is the main intersection in town. And there was a father and his three boys with him. I think one was his son for sure, maybe all three, maybe two. It was unclear to me. But they watched the whole show. And there was a, what was interesting was it was just a normal sidewalk there. So it wasn't very deep, and there was like buildings, like banks and stuff were on sort of every corner. And so you didn't have much room. So frequently when I performed, I was standing literally in the street, and it would create some really funny situations because I would interact with the people at the stoplight in their cars and so forth too, which added additional humor and fun to the whole proceeding. But after one of the shows I did, which was like during a very, it was very hot when I was there during the daytime, which was right before 4th of July. The father stuck around after the show to explain to me, you know, to cajole, as we talked about in a previous episode, people want to spend more time with you. It's a good sign. And this was especially good. And the reason I'm going to tell this story was because he brings the kids over, tips me very well. And he starts asking, you know, how long have you been doing magic? The sort of, you know, typical questions. And he points to the one kid, his son, and says, you know, he's really interested in magic. And he's got a couple videos. He watches some YouTube and whatever, which is sort of typical these days. Something I'm not in favor of, but is typical. And he said, you know, he just really enjoys it. And it's like, he's very sort of always working on something and very sort of disciplined about it. And it could be a very good hobby too, especially for children as a hobby to, like, you know, and for adults. But you want to do your part, at least I do, to attempt to raise the art another level. So I sort of explained to him why I didn't like YouTube as a medium for learning magic, why books were much better, and mentorship as well too. And then the father chose to make a very, what I found, entertaining comment, because he said, you know, not only did my son really enjoy it, but I really enjoyed it. And he turned to the son and he said, this is a magician. You're learning tricks right now, but the part you're missing is what makes a magician. This is the part you have to learn. Do you have any advice about that? And so I went into some of the advice that I now provide in my magic program called Secrets of Real Magicians. It had yet to be sort of codified at that point, and I was actually working on it at the time. So I sort of rattled off some various tactics and techniques and strategies, principles, as to how you can learn this most important part, as Neville Maskelyne in the book Our Magic, which I just read from, so eloquently pointed out, the most vital and important part. And so this is yet another example. There are people out there who understand, once you have these things in place and put some real work into the presentational side of things, there, the audiences know this, right? They can differentiate between something that is not magic per se and is just tricks, or as Maskelyne and some of the older books like to use the term, jugglery. Right? So that's what tricksters are doing. They're jugglery, this manipulation, right? The secrets, the tricks, the sleights, the methods. They're involved in the jugglery of it, but they don't make it magic. And with that short story, I will conclude episode 40. If you want to get a hold of me, of course, you can send emails to d'artagnanmagic@gmail.com. You should actually go over and get onto my email list. I send regular emails discussing, even in some cases, more deeply and providing more examples than I can on this podcast even. And point up different videos and talk about different things. I provided a video probably a while ago when you're hearing this, where I showed the difference between what virtually everybody does in an ambitious card routine versus an ambitious card routine with an actual presentation. And I just melded those two videos together and made a separate video to show the stark contrast between tricksters and magicians, between tricks and magic, between things without a presentation and things with a powerful presentation. And so I hope you enjoyed this. This is another edition of the podcast, episode 40. We're keeping it going. If you're interested in that magic program about how to add presentations, unique, original, and, you know, for you, instead of cut and paste from other sources, not you, then you should go over to d'artagnanmagic.com/realmagic. And I'll be opening that some point in 2019, probably some point past the Super Bowl. Also, I have been constructing a Dr. Seuss-like book called The Tragedy of the Trickster. If you haven't signed up for the email list, I'll be offering that up until the Super Bowl, which is on February 5th of 2019. I'll be offering that book for free. So anyone who's on the email list now, anyone who signs up between now and then, will get that book for free. It'll be a book I'll be selling for sort of a nominal charge later. It's in the works right now. And so hopefully, probably won't be ready for the Super Bowl, but maybe a week or two after the Super Bowl. And everyone will get that for free who signs up between now and then. And you're probably going to listen to this probably the week of, this will come out probably the week of the Super Bowl. So you may not have many days left, or maybe even down to hours left, because the Super Bowl happens on a Sunday and these come out Sunday morning. So this may actually come out on February 5th, I'm not sure. And if that's the case, then you're probably down to just a few hours before 5 o'clock Central Time or something before the Super Bowl starts. All right, enjoy. We'll be back again with episode 41 of Magic from Wherever I'm At.